Hear that? Up there in that tree? Oh, yeah.
Tweet, tweet.
It's me and all my homies love native manu, and it's about to start.
Yes, it is. Nau mai, hoki mai, welcome to Me and All My Homies Love Native Manu. This week, Itiwi, we are talking about the moa. And here to talk with me, as always, about our precious native manu, about the moa, is the Birdman 3000, is Pete Tonda.
Oh, morena, love. Good to be here, as always.
Yeah, bro.
And that recording.
Yes, tell us about that.
That was created by Te Papa. And I guess they just research other, like, ostriches, emus, and then they, you know, do research around, you know, Māori knowledge, and then they just create something based on also the skeletal structure.
That's what I was reading about yesterday, that they were able to look at, like, the trachea from the skeleton and be like, oh,
it's probably
and
got
it would have
deep,
sounded like this. I was
sound,
like, God, you guys are way too smart, eh?
But that's very cool.
Yeah, very cool. So, yes, today we're talking about the moa. It's one of our extinct endemic manu. But, Pete, can you just tell us, tell us more about the classification of this bird and some kind of basic info?
Yeah, extinct, unfortunately. Yeah. They lived around 50 million years in the absence of humans on Aotearoa.
Yeah.
And their ancient ancestors flew here.
Wow.
They would have been a small bird that could fly.
Yeah.
And then that gigantism, they evolved into these massive manu that, that we had with the moa. Closest relative today genetically is a small land-based South American bird, the tinamous, which can fly and looks like a sort of a large quail.
Okay.
But there were 9 species or more.
Which I didn't know there were so many species.
7 of them in the South Island, 5 in the North Island, with some crossover found in both areas.
And we've got all the names here.
Yeah. So giant, South Island giant moa, they were the biggest.
Yep.
North Island giant moa, bush moa, eastern moa, broad-billed moa, heavy-footed moa, which have got these massive, huge feet.
Butty legs.
Mantles moa, crested moa, and upland moa, which was more forest-based.
Yes, of course.
So,
and there was about 2.5 million moa in New Zealand before humans arrived here, eh?
Yeah. So a range from there, maybe a little bit less, but up to 2.5 million.
Yeah. Amazing, amazing, and crazy to think that you can go from 2.5 million to zero.
There's reasons for that.
Yeah, we'll get into that. As we always say. Yeah. So, for the Māori relationship to the moa, it's very significant manu. Pete, can you speak to that a bit more, Bob?
Yeah, so, you know, when Māori arrived, they probably couldn't believe the food source for the manu. Giant, you know, the giant moa weighed up to 250 kilos.
Oh my, that's a freaking meal for the whānau.
A lot of meat on the bones. Feathers and skin used in clothing and for cloaks, bones used for tools, instruments, necklaces.
Yeah.
And you want to talk about the rock art?
Yes. So down Te Waipounamu, near where I'm from, near Timbadu, there's lots of rock art drawings that are very significant for Kaitahu. I think there's over 500 sites, and there's been a lot of damage to them with, like, stock rubbing on the drawings, or, like, people actually cutting the drawings out of the caves. These drawings were done by Kaitahu as they moved around the South Island and lived in these cave structures. And there's a valley up the back of Timaru called, it's literally called Moa Valley, or Wahi Moa. If you're ever down in the South Island, I think it's an awesome time to go to the Te Ana Māori Rock Art Centre, or you can go on to Craigmore Station, which has, it's in that Moa Valley is on that station. So it's a very special, very special bird. And I don't know, it was so prevalent in the South Island. I thought it was more like all around the Motu, but
Yeah, it wasn't both, but there seemed to be a lot more in the South Island. Unfortunately, they were hunted into extinction probably within 100 years of Māori arriving. Yep. And very fast. And there were lots of theories, you know, there are lots of theories about the impact of losing the moa to extinction that early, but they also lost the giant puaka, puakai eagle.
The harst eagle.
The adspil and the native geese around the same time.
Do we have native geese?
We had native geese.
What the hell?
Yeah. But it's generally thought that because of that significant loss so quickly, it significantly influenced Māori thinking around sustainable use of resources.
Yep.
And led to the development of these beautiful sustainable practices they've got today, like imposing rāhui or managing harvesting of the likes of the titi or shellfish.
Mm.
And so, you know, out of that has developed something pretty awesome.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
And, you know, big learnings to come out of that, which is amazing. Something that Pākehā could really learn from, eh? But yeah, we've got some whakatauki from your reference book, Ngā Pepe o Ngā Tipuna, sorry. So our first whakatauki, got my words this morning. Ka ngaro a moa te iwi nei. Tell us about that one, Pete.
The tribe will disappear like the moa.
Mm.
Really significant whakatauki about the second half of the 19th century.
Yeah.
With, you know, the fatal diseases brought in from Europeans, plus widespread land loss.
Mm.
And it was kind of believed then that the Māori race would just inevitably die out.
Yeah.
And it's because the population had almost halved. And that whakatauki kind of connects it strongly to the loss of the moa.
Yeah.
And there's something quite sad and haunting about that.
Yeah, definitely.
It's really lived in the thinking, and there's a lot of whakatauki about the moa, like more than any others that I could
definitely
find.
Definitely.
It's interesting.
Definitely. And it's on a similar theme, ka ngaro o te reo, ka ngaro taua, pera e te ngaro o te moa. If the language is lost, we will be lost, as dead as the moa. And that, yeah, this, I've heard this one before, but yeah, just about important to retain te reo Māori and you know, through te reo Māori, Māori are able to retain culture and and you don't want to lose language and for it to
be language is so important to identity.
We don't want it to be as dead as the moa. So it's like really beautiful to see, like, out of this like extinction there's like all these big, you know, whakatauki and proverbs and learnings that have come out of it. As special as next whakatauki, we've got two more for you. Kamihio ki te kōwhatu I tino ai te moa. What does that mean, Pete?
I greet the stone once used to roast the moa. It refers to the stones used for hangi, and it kind of indicates it's a very old cooking method going back, many hundreds of years.
Yep.
You know, when, you know, moa's been extinct for over 500 years.
Yep.
So that sort of traditional cooking in the hangi is just a very, very old practice.
Yep, definitely. And our final whakatauki, ngā te moa e takahe te rata. Ooh, that's a good one.
Yeah, the rata was trampled by the moa.
Yeah.
And if the young rata is trampled, it sort of grows crooked. And it sort of relates it to early bad habits seen in children, and they become very hard to overcome. And I thought that was an accurate little observation.
Yeah, maybe we should have learnt that earlier in life, eh?
Absolutely.
I'm sure we've got a few bad habits. But yeah, how would you describe this bird, Pete? You kind of said emu, ostrich-like.
Yeah.
And I'm sure most of you know what the moa looks like, but just for anyone who doesn't.
Yeah, and they're part of the ratite family. Which
I really like that word.
It's a bit like pelagic, isn't it?
Yeah.
I'm not sure I want to be a ratite, though.
A ratite.
It sounds rodent-like.
Yeah, we want to be pelagic.
Anyway, they're flightless birds, including emus, ostriches, cassowaries.
They are the scariest birds
in
the world.
They are dangerous. They can kill people. So we don't want to be near those. And the kiwi, of course.
Yeah, yeah.
And so 9 species of them, as listed earlier. The giant moa could reach up to 3.6 metres if it was stretching for food and weigh around 250 kilograms.
Yeah.
But these were the females, and they it's interesting, they grew much bigger than the males.
I love to hear it. And it's seen as
the most extreme case of size difference based on sex in the bird kingdom.
Really?
Because the giant female moa were 1.5 times taller and almost 3 times the weight of the males. So not hard to determine who was boss.
Boss. But also I read that the female couldn't actually sit on the egg because she was so big, she'd crush it, so the male had to do all the work. Yeah. And I love to hear that.
And that's quite common in ratites. The male seems to incubate the eggs.
Okay, shout out to the ratites.
Yeah, they're quite progressive, really.
Even though they were alive millions of years ago.
So the smallest moa was about the size of a turkey.
Yeah.
Heavy-footed moa had these massive feet and short, stumpy legs.
Mm.
And the other interesting thing is their spine was attached to the back of the head, not the base.
That's crazy.
So most birds have, you know, the base. Yeah. They're like us. Our necks are attached to the base of our head.
Yeah.
For the moa, it's attached to the back of the head, which allowed them to go down and graze foliage low to the ground.
I'm, like, trying to move my head around like the moa. But we don't really, like, we've kind of got, like, drawings of them, but we don't, like, we can assume what they look like.
Yeah.
But we don't really know for certain, is it?
Well, there's some of the fossils are really well preserved.
Okay, cool, yeah.
And so we know the kind of brown-grey feathers, but also some sort of yellow-reddish brown colouring in there as well.
Awesome, yeah.
Yeah. So some of the fossils are really well preserved because they... In the limestone country, they fall into the tomos and it creates this kind of chemical preservation place.
It really preserves the fossils quite well.
And
in
swamps too. If they get into the swamps, they get really well preserved.
I was reading watching this thing yesterday how, like, there was maybe... Oh, it's just somewhere in Te Waipounamu. There was, like, they found this site of, like, 50 moa fossils because all these moa had walked into a swamp and just got stuck in there.
Yeah.
And then, obviously, the swamp had preserved their fossils so well.
Really well.
Yeah, incredible.
Yeah.
So they're found in both the North and South Islands. What do they eat, Pete?
Yeah, they ate a variety of plants, leaves, twigs, flowers, berries, seeds. And they swallowed gizzard stones.
What the frick is a gizzard stone?
And they choose them quite carefully. The little stones that are rounded and smoother the better, and they've found up to 3 kilos of these rounded gizzard stones in the fossils. Some of them had about 20, but others had hundreds of stones in their gizzards. But the stones help to grind this hard-to-process food because vegetation's really hard to digest, and it ground it up.
So it's kind of like they had their own little pestle mortar.
The little sort of flour mill thing going on.
In their stomach. A living flour mill. Awesome.
But the result of that is that they weren't thought to be able to spread seeds.
Because it would grind it up.
Because
it
grind
so
up the seeds too much.
Hey, and that's okay. We don't...
Yeah.
You guys just have a break from that. Other birds can do it.
Exactly.
But yeah, as we've said, the males are really only the other ones and are the ones incubating the eggs.
Yeah.
But can you tell us about some other breeding habits, Pete?
Yeah, they made nests, platforms of twigs, coarse vegetation, sort of strip bark, often nested amongst sort of rocky shelters.
Yeah.
Nested late spring to summer.
And would just, like, lay one egg, right?
Yes. And their eggs were huge.
Yeah.
Like, they found one fossil egg that was 24 centimetres by 17.8 centimetres.
And I was watching something yesterday. Sorry, I keep watching something. But I was watching this. They found a fossil and it still had the egg in the mama's puku.
Yeah, I saw that.
That's incredible, eh? Yeah.
And they could weigh up to 4 kilos. So
the eggs.
That's a big omelette, isn't it? Gotta feed the whole whānau.
And then just to finish off, Pete, we'll talk about some threats.
Yes.
Which obviously the threats have succeeded in this case, which is sad.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So pre-human threats were only the Puakai harst eagle.
Aye.
And the adspill was another predatory bird, but they would have preyed on the juvenile birds. But then once Māori arrived, they were hunted to extinction within about 100 years.
Mm.
Habitat loss could have had a bit of an impact as well.
Yeah.
But hunting was the death knell.
Yeah.
And that's the pattern that's happened throughout history where humans have wiped out species.
Yeah.
And then when the Europeans arrived with mammalian predators plus large-scale hunting and collecting, many other of our manu species went extinct, like the huia and the thick owl, the laughing owl, and quite a few others. So, yeah, they're gone. But there's another present-day threat, which...
Yeah, this is I don't like this one.
Yeah, it's a proposal for de-extinction.
Yeah.
Where they're using genetic engineering to recreate the moa.
Yeah.
And I know some people get really excited about that.
Yeah.
But I think it's a terrible idea. And I wonder what the point is, because you just end up with modified emus that look like a moa but are not really.
Yeah.
And they're just there for exhibition and our gratification. And
exactly.
No chance of living a natural sort of moa life. So I reckon let them rest in history and loss and learn from their loss. And not let any more of our precious manu be lost to extinction. That's the big challenge.
I completely agree with you, Pete. And just interested to hear if you've got any thoughts on that for Cardle guys, Peter Jackson bringing back the moa. God, whatever. But to finish off, it's been a big one today.
Yeah.
And it's really sad to not think that this bird, this bird is still not around, and it would have been amazing to see a moa in real life.
Yeah, it would have been.
Yeah, I think it's just a message, whenever we talk about an extinct manu to, you know, all of our bird species, well, most of them are in decline.
Yeah, they are.
And so...
It's a common theme.
Yeah, we are in a mass extinction event, and so we need to do better.
We absolutely do.
Yeah. And you've got a song for us, Pete, to finish off?
Has to be a song from Moana and the Moa Hunters.
Yeah.
Ancestors song, it's just an awesome song. It's got traditional Māori instruments in it, and it's very atmospheric and talks about the ancestors and the moa. You know, they are our ancestors.
The moa is an ancestor for tangata whenua. Aye, marika. Yeah. Thanks, Pete, for coming in. Love this kōrero. And, text in any whakaaro you've got about the moa, guys. I'd love to hear from you. Mā te wā. Southern Valley in my dream. Mountain rise up to the sky. Floating in a pool of water pure and warm. Stone of green, it turns to gold. Kiss my skin, wash the pain away.
Walk the talk on my ancestors, walk the talk. talk of my ancestors. Walk the talk of my tupuna. Walk the talk of my ancestors. Walk the talk of my tupuna. Walk the talk of my ancestors. Walk the talk of my tupuna. Walk the talk of my ancestors. Walk the talk of my tupuna. Yeah, walk the talk of my ancestors. Walk the talk of my tupuna. Walk the talk of my ancestors. Walk the talk of my tupuna.
Isn't that beautiful?
That was Me and All My Homies Love Native Manu, only on 95 BFM.